what I was going to start off by saying to you is that it's okay to think differently. That's mainly what I want to get over, because you may well be correct. But if you watch the questions coming up at the plenary, very good plenaries earlier, clearly a lot of you do think differently. What I'm interested in is how representative are those questions of you as a whole. Jeff said, don't follow the highest status person in the room. In other words, don't follow necessarily the highest status person in your department. The permanent secretary may not always be right, may not be correct, particularly now. We are in a really, really interesting time. The reason for putting up the cover of this book comes out in January, is I want some help from somebody. The one-line summary of this book, called Poor Britannia, Brexit and the End of Empire, is that Brexit is Suez times 10. And I want to get that number right. I just came up with 10. And I would love, if anybody can email me and come up with a reason for a particular number. Suez was a bit of an embarrassment. And I suspect there were younger civil servants who knew that at the time, but the older people at the top said, let's do it. Suez didn't turn out with everything being awful. We actually got the 1960s, which in general were pretty good after Suez. That's my kind of optimistic take on what might happen next. But not everything was great in the 60s. My co-author, Sally Tomlinson, was teaching school children in Wolverhampton at the time that Enoch Powell did that speech. That's why she wanted to write this particular book. And one reason for mentioning that about diversity is one reason that this book has come out so late is that lots of men have been very, very quick to write books on Brexit. There's been 150 books on Brexit. The first 20 were written by men who solely went to Oxford or Cambridge University, apart from one who went to St Andrews. And we're only just beginning to get a diversity of views, and what were the normal views. Let's just talk about us, Britain, a little bit. This is a graph that my friend and colleague Bethan Suyin Thomas produced. Bethan claims to be from the smallest minority group in Britain, which is, she's part Welsh, part Chinese. You can try and beat Bethan if you want. She painstakingly collected census data from 1841 all the way through to the present day to try to produce the graph of where we were born. The interesting thing about this graph is that nobody else had done it. Whereas in the United States of America, these kind of graphs are celebrated in their museums about American history all over the place. And you'll ask, why didn't we produce this kind of graph before? Now, you may look at that and think, oh, well, there's a great rise in immigration. No wonder people behaved in a particular way. But of course, as you are all statisticians or economists, you know we simply change the scale and the message becomes very different. And of course, all around you, but people are moving around more. So, assuming that you're typical, how many of you were born in Britain? Good, that's a hard one to keep your hand down if you're shy, isn't it? How many are born in the north? Quite a lot. How many were born in the south? Right, so a few more, okay.
Midlands.
Ah, you could go for the Midlands. Controversially, I once drew a line. Anyway, I won't say any more about that. You tell me where you are from in the Midlands, and I will put you north or south. Let's not go any further. Okay, this is another map by Bethan. This is from 2011 census data. Each hexagon is a constituency. The hexagons are coloured according to the ethnic origins of people aged 16 to 24. We've actually split the constituencies into half, the poor half and the rich half, as far as we could do it. The point of showing you this is that the light blue, your most common as a young adult to be white, and second most common to be white other. Right? This is still not a particularly diverse country. But, and of course you don't know where these places are, but you're looking at Leeds, Bradford, Liverpool and so on. When I click through to the south of the country, even more is white or white British. That may be where many of you from the south actually grew up. It may be where your parents are now. The reason for highlighting Stoke, by the way, is I'm talking in Stoke next week. and then in Hull, and then in Great Yarmouth, and then all the really, well, what you think of as the really interesting places to look at. So that's just a little bit about our geography, or our diverse geography, or our lack of diverse geography. Immigration. This is a map from 2014. The dark blue is areas where over a fifth of the population were born in another country. The reason for showing this map is that you may think that the UK had unusual rates of immigration. It didn't. London does, but most of the rest of the UK, particularly the north, is rather like Eastern Europe in terms of how low the immigration rates were. Switzerland in the middle, partly because of its shape, has some of the highest rates. But down here, that blob is Madrid. Spain has higher rates of immigration, including, of course, a large chunk of the English who are out there. 2014. It's amazing what we are learning about ourselves in hindsight. It's amazing how ignorant we were. Absolutely amazing how ignorant we were. First European elections, around about 1979, I think. Nobody voted for the far right. I don't know if they put up candidates anyway, nobody. 5 years later, the National Front got 0.1% of the vote. And then if you follow, I haven't got the graph, European elections, it goes up and up with the referendum party with UKIP and so on. And in 2014, 52% of the population of Britain who voted in the European election voted for a party to the right of European mainstream Conservatives. Because our Conservative Party had actually left the European Conservative bloc and was allied with Alternative for Deutschland and so on. We didn't make anything of that at the time. We didn't go, look, 52% of people are voting for this in 2014. We are living in absolutely fascinating times where we are finding things out about ourselves that we had not noticed. And when something shocking happens, don't worry about the graph, read the text. When something shocking happens, your immediate reaction to it is to probably get it wrong. Probably get your interpretation wrong. So the interpretation of the Brexit vote was, oh, these are people in the north who are flooded with migrants, who their lives are falling apart and they want out. Now, it takes some time, and this is one of the simplest ways to show it, but you can show that more people voted Leave in Essex than in these 21 or 22 areas combined, including Scarborough. Essex had a lower electorate than those 21 or 22 areas combined. Essex was absolutely vital to voting Leave, but it's not just Essex. Hampshire. Anybody from Hampshire? Few, got parents in Hampshire, okay. More people voted Leave in Hampshire than Derby, Blackpool, Rotherham, Sheffield, which is large, Great Yarmouth, Hartlepool and Merthyr combined. And Hampshire has a smaller electorate. I can go on for one more. More people voted Leave in Kent than Bolsover, Doncaster, Hull, Chesterfield, Salford, Stoke-on-Trent and Sunderland. We kind of don't want to know it, don't want to admit it. We don't like admitting that the majority of Leave voters are ABC1, the majority of Leave voters live in the south of England. It's still, just because that's a statistic doesn't mean it's a story. I am trying to make it a story, slowly, but it's interesting how we can't accept this, because it's our parents, for those who are in the majority in the room. What is going on with us? What is strange about us? Who understands the Gini coefficient? Go on. I know, this is the only place I can do this. Okay, almost a majority. It should be a majority. Let's try that again. Who understands the Gini coefficient? Thank you, we got a majority just, okay. For those who don't, this is income inequality. A Gini of 0.5, which Mexico is near to. If we were to take everybody from here, and we're going to give you all £75,000 a year, household income, £75,000. I know it's in London, might be a bit tricky, but you've got £75,000. You lot, 25. That really is tricky, and that's you and your significant other. You're getting by on 25. You lot have got cleaner. You are the cleaner, right? And you're doing another job. You lot go on holiday, maybe twice a year. You don't have a holiday. That's 0.5. To get an idea of what a Gini of 0.5 is, this is the top of the OECD list. I won't show you the rest, but basically these are dysfunctional countries where things are not going very well. Mexico, Chile, Turkey, the United States. Lithuania is always interesting. Russia, then this strange place called the United Kingdom, and then Israel. Now, Israel is a very divided country with some internal issues. And Russia is a country that isn't doing very well in terms of the cohesiveness of its population. And we are in between the two of them. But of course, we think this is normal. It really, really isn't. It's not been normal in our recent history. It is not normal in Europe. We have the highest, bar the odd Baltic country that manages to zoom up, the highest income inequality on the continent. There's a time trend for those who weren't aware. It is different from time trends in other countries. All countries become more equal, then they fan out and they do something quite differently from one another. The 40% at the top is the best off 10%. Who's in the best off 10%? Well done, well done, well done. It's a mixture of knowing and being brave, isn't it? You can work it out later, but it's a lot more of you if you do it for the top 10% in Britain. It's just that you're living in London and it doesn't feel like it. Anyway, I won't go any further. 60% of all income is left for the bottom 90% of society. That doesn't help things go well. There are a huge number of correlations of what goes badly, but my favourite is education. And this is what we get if we test people's ability at maths at age 24. Not when they do their GCSE, because we're very good at getting people to get A's or A stars, but we teach maths in a way that means that you forget it by 24, which isn't generally a good thing to do. At this point, I'm going to hand out three GCSE questions. And the triangle rule in particular. What do we do? Very quick statistics. This is what we make. It's not high tech, it's not AI. It does involve some robots, not enough. In that top bar, transport, my little hometown, what we're most productive at is actually a car factory. We have a car factory that produces 1% of our manufacturing outputs for the UK. It's owned by BMW, it's called Mini. It has 1,200 robots, it's lovely, it's absolutely silent. Apart from the seventh line, which is Eastern European men, just in case the robots revolt. But six lines, making a Mini every 1 minute, 2 seconds. And they announced last week that it's going to do the summer shutdown early on the 29th of March and decide later whether it starts again. Each one of those 1,200 robots fits in the back of an articulated container. None of them are too big to be able to ship out. Trade statistics, in case anybody wants to have an argument later, but India ain't going to work. This is absolutely fascinating times. I read the 25 documents on leaving, and the most interesting one is the one about civic nuclear facilities, of which my university is involved in a large number, which says that they will be funded all the way through to 2019. That's 2019, at which point, if you're running a civic nuclear facility, you're advised to get professional advice. That somebody in this room may have written that. But this is absolutely incredible times. Manufacturing, we're not good at, essentially, but have a look at Finland. I think Finland's interesting. Finland gets very annoying. Finland produces the best educational statistics. Finland is the only European country with falling homelessness rates. Finland, even though Nokia went half bust, it's still up there. A few other things I think that are important. That's a graph in the FT just showing how weird we are. Even when our GDP goes up, we decide not to share it out amongst the population. No wonder people are pissed off. It has to, you know, and the FT are explaining this. You know, 20 years ago, the kind of thing I was arguing would not be in the FT. Now the world is changing. This graph was released by the Office of National Statistics on the 7th of August. It shows of 20 countries that they compared, the UK had the smallest increase in life expectancy. What it actually shows, if you get the data from that ONS report, is that life expectancy peaked in 2014 and has been lower ever since for both men and women, and we're the only place in Europe where that has occurred. The bars going up, by the way, the yellow bars, are for 6 years earlier, and that may well be A8 migration. Letting in enormous numbers of young, extremely healthy, well-educated people from Europe, particularly Eastern Europe, may have been one of the biggest boosts to our life expectancy ever, ironically. Things are going dramatically wrong, they are falling apart. This again, ONS. ONS are wonderful. They're fighting a single-handed battle. ONS produced this last year. In 1990, we had a neonatal mortality rate, which was the seventh best in the whole of Europe. By 2 years ago, we got down to 19th. Since then, our neonatal mortality rate and our entire infant mortality rate has risen significantly 2 years in a row. Nowhere else in Europe has it risen 2 years in a row. No other time since the Second World War has it risen 2 years in a row. And the babies who are dying in slightly higher numbers, we are talking small, slightly higher, are babies born to English-born mothers. It's not the babies of immigrants. The immigrants are young, fit, thin, and well-educated. And why does it matter that this is neonatal? Because it's around the time of birth. And it's around about when it really matters, whether the midwife is exhausted at the time you go into labour. Things are falling apart. If this carries on for 7 years, we overtake Romania. I mean, it is quite dramatic how we did it. Last of the kind of shouting out graphs from me, but I think this really needs to be known. In around about 2013, a civil servant called Tom Hennell released data saying that something was going dramatically wrong with life expectancy in Britain. You can find it if you look in Health Service Journal and so on. He was shut down. The document saying that he shouldn't have done it is still online. He's a civil servant whistleblower, but thank God he did it. He said something is going badly wrong. About 2013, when he first spotted it occurring. This is the age-sex standardised mortality rate for the UK. This is not happening anywhere else in Europe. The response from Public Health England when this first began was it's influenza. The response next year when it carried on was it's influenza. Next year, influenza. Next year, influenza. A special kind of influenza that only happens to Britain and that you can't pick up from virology tests. Thankfully, in the last 4 months so far, Public Health England have not mentioned influenza again. But you are living in absolutely remarkable times, and the statistics really matter and the interpretation matters. Two more graphs and then I'm done. How many of you are private renting? Got a majority? Keep your hand up if you've got children. Just a few of you. Okay. A quarter of all families with children in England are now private renting. So those few of you who put your hands up, you are representative of a quarter of all families with children. I don't know if that helps, if you feel a bit more like, you know. It was never meant to happen. The big increase in private renting wasn't supposed to happen for families with children. You can be evicted with 2 months notice and your children are going to school. This is not good. Last graph about why we're strange. This is the IMF estimates of the proportion of GDP spent on public services. The lovely thing about talking to an audience like you is what I normally do is I only put that graph up and no other graph, and I talk for 30 minutes. That's what I normally do to a normal set of normal human beings. I'm hoping I haven't gone too fast with you, and I'm hoping I don't have to explain it. The rise, of course, is the bailing out of the banks. Ireland is exceptional because we advised them. Anyway. But there's the UK going down to 36%, playing a game along with the United States. And one thing I want you to remember to take away, and of course there's Finland. Absolute basket case, you know, you spend 56% of GDP on public services and Finland's falling apart. The schools are terrible, the streets are lined with homeless people, they can't make anything. There's France, you can see the lot. But here's the one thing to remember, The manifesto commitment spending by the Her Majesty's opposition would move this to here. Absolutely irresponsible, economically illiterate. How on earth can you think that this is even a serious economic policy to go from there to there? So I hope you all spread the message about how terrible Her Majesty's opposition are and how completely impossible their economic plan is. Thank you very much.